Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden announced this week his choice of a running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris. In with analysis are Nate Bauer, director of the University of Alaska Press, and Alexander Hirsch, UAF political scientist.
As a rule of thumb, elections with incumbents are referendums. I think that's the case in 2020, the 538 forecast model. Just looking at it, just a cursory glance, I haven't studied it in any depth yet, but I think it confirms my suspicion that November will be a referendum on Trump's presidency rather than an election that's about the two contenders in any other sense. And so that's the context in which I understand the Kamala Harris choice that Biden has made. On this program before, we've kind of explored the idea and the concept that vice presidential candidates don't affect outcomes, electoral outcomes that significantly. I think that that's true, but with the caveat that yes, voters ultimately vote for the top of the ticket candidate, but whomever that candidate selects as their vice president informs voters about who they are to some extent, right? So like voters for John McCain thought about him in a new light after he selected Sarah Palin as a running mate, right? The way people thought about him changed. For that reason, I was sort of anticipating that it would be possible that whomever, you know, Biden chose, you know, would have an effect on how people perceived him as a candidate. What kind of president will you be in light of this kind of important choice that you've made, especially because Biden has cast himself as a transition president, which is a really interesting thing that he's done. So I've never seen that in my lifetime. Someone running for president saying, vote for me, but I'm a bridge. I'll return things to what they were before and I won't really do anything else. And I'll set someone else up to become president. It's a fascinating campaign tactic. I don't know if it's a successful strategy or not, but it's unusual. Nate, how do you read the Kamala Harris thing?
I think your take is nuanced and smart, but yes, I agree that the evidence suggests that vice presidential picks do not affect voting margins. You know, one thing that's interesting, I read this, I had to double check to make sure it was true. Kamala Harris is the first Californian to be on a Democratic presidential ticket, either as president or vice president. And actually, she's the first president or vice president to be from any Western state, any state west of the Rocky Mountains. But everything you said, Alex, I think is right. It is a signal to his base or to the constituency that he wants to turn out. Says it's a signal about, I think, the Democratic Party as a whole, solidifying or confirming in a strong way that the Democratic Party considers diversity a really important aspect of the party, especially in comparison to the GOP. I heard an interview with Jim Clyburn, who we've made reference to a number of times here in these discussions, and seems like he's over the moon about it. So if Joe Biden really feels like he owes Jim Clyburn something special for getting him over the hump in South Carolina and starting the comeback and the resurgence that ultimately led to his, you know, presumptive nomination, maybe people like Jim Clyburn in the Democratic Party matter. Those opinions matter quite a lot. And most people predict it, and the political betting markets and stuff had her as the leading favorite for months now. You know, there are questions about her background as a prosecutor, but ironically, the Trump campaign so far prior to this pick seems like they wanted to focus on Black Lives Matter protests and the subsequent defunding or restructuring of police forces in major cities like Seattle and Minneapolis. Ironically, the choice of Kamala Harris, who has a lengthy and prominent record as a prosecutor, might weaken the Trump campaign's attempt to cast Joe Biden and his ticket as somehow like anti-police.
Yeah, I've been trying to gauge what Trump's reaction to the Harris nomination for VP, you know, how he's going to campaign on that, and monitoring his early tweets. I guess I imagine that the way that the Trump administration and the Trump campaign kind of talks about who Kamala Harris is will evolve, and probably we won't see kind of a full tilt attack on her until perhaps the VP debates or perhaps the GOP convention. But I would have expected a couple of different experimental strategies. Watching Trump over the years, I noticed that he's someone who likes to say a lot of different things. and then just see like kind of what sticks, whatever works, that's the direction he'll go in. And he's willing to say things that are sometimes tensional or paradoxical, so long as there's no political repercussion.
And to different audiences too, right? That's something that I think is remarkable. I'm not sure it's always strategic and conscious, but I'm somebody that, you know, I read his stuff on Twitter, and then I listen to his different messages on Fox News and on other television programs. And then, you know, he's got different messages and different even like tones. And sometimes it feels like even different voices that he will use in completely different settings. If you watch a press conference of his and then you see the messages from his campaign and look at what he's retweeting online, you can get whiplash. I guess I would echo the sentiment that he owes some of his success, I think, to that approach, because there are plenty of people that only follow him on Facebook and probably never tune in to the press conferences, and vice versa. And so I think he's able to take advantage of different kind of media streams and different audience tendencies. I suppose that there are people out there, voters out there, who have been overwhelmed over the last 3.5 years by this, that maybe are reconsidering their support for Donald Trump and the Trump administration over the last few years. But I think that in terms of a referendum, I think that one of the major differences between 2016 and 2020 is that in 2016, Donald Trump was the chaos candidate. He was the change candidate. He was the candidate who, like, let's see what happens. This person's an unknown. He seems like he's willing to say things that other people aren't and introduce some sort of chaotic elements into a system that feels like it's not really working for everybody. But in 2020, you know, he's the incumbent and he's got this track record to run on. And I think depending on who you talk to, it's not a very good one. And especially the multiple crises that we're going through right now. He, of course, and I think some of his ardent supporters would say, oh, well, that stuff's not his fault. The virus came from China. He's done a stellar job of handling it, that it could be much worse. His numbers of how many people actually could be dead if it wasn't Donald Trump as president, you know, that number seems like it keeps going up and up and up in his mind. You know, people that we could have lost 2 million people, we could have lost 6 million people. You know, the models were saying this at the very beginning, and I shut down travel from China before anybody else would. And so, you know, he's got what I would consider kind of desperate talking points to highlight his strengths in the face of crisis. But I think for a lot of people from the very beginning, what people were really hoping for is that we could get through this period, this first term of Donald Trump without a major crisis. Even I think some Republicans were saying that they weren't confident in his ability to really manage the toughest parts of the job as president, partly because he hadn't done it before. He had not been a governor. He had not been elected to office. He didn't have knowledge or experience or wisdom that comes from some of those jobs. But now he does, you know, and now I think that it is fair to make an attempt to judge his performance as president. And, you know, it seems likely that regardless of what happens, and he's made this point himself, regardless of what he does, there's going to be a strong portion of people that are going to continue to support him and be eager to vote for him.
I'm anticipating an October surprise strategy amongst the Trump campaign staff. There's a narrative that the Hillary Clinton campaign weaves about the October surprise concerning her being under investigation, the Comey announcement that she's under investigation. You know, that's the narrative that the Clinton campaign opts for in terms of just gaining some explanatory orientation about what happened in 2016. I think to a certain extent, that narrative is also accepted by the Trump campaign, in which case they would want to perhaps support some similar public revelation right before the election. And Bill Barr right now, who I'm increasingly thinking of as the Dick Cheney of the Trump administration, he's been tasked with investigating the investigators, right? He's investigating the Mueller investigation and trying to come up with a way of discrediting some of the Mueller investigation's revelations regarding Russian collusion between Putin and Trump. And to me, it's looking like there are clues that perhaps the conclusions of Bill Barr's investigation will be released at some point, you know, perhaps in October. Perhaps that's what they're looking at. Perhaps that's what they're thinking. But I would certainly expect that.
But Alex, if you're prone to trusting Donald Trump, you believe that stuff already. Yeah. And I think that, you know, if Bill Barr comes in the third week of October and says, oh yeah, we did this investigation and it is true. Like they spied, like Obama Biden spied on Trump Tower. I guess I don't feel like there's anybody that's going to believe that doesn't believe that already.
Yeah. I see your point. I see what you're saying. I'm just saying that given the narrative about that being an important factor in 2016, I wouldn't be surprised if the Trump campaign attempted to duplicate the same result in 2020. Now, what you're saying is you wouldn't anticipate whatever the October surprise, you wouldn't anticipate that it would have much effect on the election. I might agree with that.
You're right to be cautious about it, but I think it's going to be for it to be something that matters, which I think it could be. I think it would have to be something where they're using their actual administrative power to make people either less confident in the results or to actually affect the results in some meaningful way.
Alexander Hirsch is a professor of political science at UAF, and Nate Bauer directs the UA Press. I'm Robert Hannon.